Conversations with, a podcast by the Equality, Diversity and Inclusion Committee at the University of Galway. This podcast is in conjunction with the IASLT, and my name is Divya Ravi Kumar Grant. David, would you like to introduce yourself?
Thanks, Divya. My name is David O'Shea, and I am a senior speech and language therapist working in South West of Ireland in County Kerry, and I'm delighted to be part of this podcast today.
Oh, thank you. And why did you choose speech and language, David?
I suppose I would have started this speech and language therapy course back in UCC in 2012. And I was drawn to it, I suppose. I had gone through, I think what a lot of people go through of, should I do teaching, drawn to kind of medicine and healthcare. And I kind of found myself looking for something in the middle. And I think that's where I landed my foot on speech and language therapy, having the mix of pediatric work, adult work, and being able to, I suppose, have that impactful engagement with people across all the lifespan. So that's where I found myself quite randomly at one point, but now I'm so glad I did.
Yeah, and did you decide, was it like in your leaving cert year that you kind of heard about it? Like when did you kind of hear about speech and language therapy? Because a lot of people struggle to hear about the specific allied health professions before they go into a course.
Yes, very true. Yeah, I suppose I would have definitely come across it, I suppose, in the CEO kind of looking in the end of fifth year into leaving cert then in sixth year. And I suppose I was quite early on in sixth year. I kind of had decided, I'd say, prior to Christmas and stuff, if I remember correctly, that this was what I kind of was focusing on. And from then on, I didn't really change. And I was very lucky to do well and get offered the course in UCC straight away. And I'm still here. How many years later now? Graduated in 2016. So I'm working nearly 8 years now at the end of this year, so it's been a whirlwind.
Yeah, of course. And what group do you work with generally, or do you do a mix?
So I'm mixed. I'm in private practice at the moment for the last nearly 7 years. So I work mainly with a caseload of autistic children and young adults, as well as some intellectual disability. And I have a little small caseload then of some dysphagia work, kind of mostly with older populations in a private acute setting. So it's great. I have a great variety.
Yeah, I was going to say it keeps it really interesting, I'm sure, for your work, because
Yeah.
a lot of people can feel like they're a bit stifled by being with one population group, but it must be
Yeah,
really
no.
rewarding.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And I suppose I'm very lucky in where I'm working that we get a lot of time for CPD and a great allocation of funding. So I suppose we can really specialize, but also diversify, if that makes sense, that I would have done a lot of courses like everyone during COVID, kind of on stammering and different things. So when a new group comes in and I have availability, I can say, actually, I want to get myself stuck back into the world of dysfluency and stammering so I can take on a few smallies, as I say, and do that. So it's great
Yeah.
to kind of have a perspective, but also an ability to kind of flow between areas within your interests and specialties at the same time. So yeah, it's fantastic.
Definitely. And was there, like, where did you find out about the course for the first time? Do you remember?
I think it was the CAO book, you know, you get the general listing of courses. And then I remember distinctly going to the open day in UCC and I suppose getting the kind of tour and looking around. And then at the time, I think they had new websites done as well. It's funny the things you remember and just seeing the kind of list of, you know, modules, kind of going, oh, anatomy, and being able to have that kind of aspect of very diverse learning to a prof, and also having a professional degree. But I think it just always caught me very much as being something I'd be interested in. And I suppose from a personal background as well, I would have always grown up with a lot of children around. Like my mom would have been involved with looking after children at different points in my life. So I suppose I was very much akin with younger people. And then being the younger, my dad being the youngest of 11 children, all my aunties and uncles are quite older, so my cousins would be two. So I suppose we would have had a big kinship with a lot of our grand aunts and uncles. I was around a lot of elderly people from a young age as well. And I suppose just seeing a lot of the different things that life throws at you, maybe is the best way to put it. And I suppose it just really pulled in my desire, I suppose, to support people and care for people and help people at a time in their life that they need it. And I think it just all came so organically together for me that speech therapy landed the way it did for me. So it's very unique. I think not everyone goes through this, but it just really felt like the right thing for me since I found it, if that makes sense.
It really does. And I feel like it, like, your experience kind of highlights an aspect of allied health that I think people forget about, which is that there's this lovely aspect of it that goes across the life course. And I think that, you know, I'm a registered dietitian myself, and it's the same, you know, when it comes to dietetics as well, when it comes to feeding, it's just across the life course. And, you know, I feel like with speech and language therapy, people kind of tend to kind of silo it a little bit and assume it's just children, or assume it's just elderly people. And, you know, as in, it can really be something that can help you regardless of where you're at or where your circumstances are at too.
100% like that, and such a diverse course, like all our courses like that. And even like on a personal level, my fiance, she's an occupational therapist, and I suppose we've had great conversations over the years of like where our work will meet in the middle, but how diverse both professions can be. And the idea even years ago that as a speech and language therapist, I might be able to work with people with voice problems, which I do a little bit of and not as much anymore, but even someone maybe who has vocal nodules or polyps, or someone who maybe is identifying as transgender and might need support with their identity of their voice and what that means to them. Like, it's so specialized, but our title doesn't give us enough credit for the variety of work that we can provide across the lifespan.
Yeah. And would the work that you do, so with transgender people, would that be something you do through private practice?
So at the moment, I suppose for clarification, I haven't worked with any transgender clients, but I suppose it's just highlighting, I suppose, the nature of the work, how diverse it
Yeah.
can be. But I would know other therapists that would have done that work before, and I suppose really loved it. But again, it's very specialized and very interesting. But I suppose it's always a point where people ask me, oh, but your speech and language therapy is just working with children who have difficulties with their S's and
Yes, of
F's,
course.
or maybe that they've had a stroke. And I'm like, that's one or two parts of it, but there's such a wide variety of areas to work on. So it's an area that I often mention because I suppose it's something people mightn't even think of, the same way with stammering, the same way with maybe neurological diseases like Parkinson's and dementia or motor neuron, that there's all these associated kind of communication and swallowing difficulties that may arise as part of these presentations. So people are always fascinated with the wide variety of work and the different types of clients I could have in coming into my office in the one day.
Definitely. And I think it's just it's interesting. I suppose I'm highlighting it as well because we're at the start of July, so you know, after Pride Month. And I think it's just so important that work, you know, working with transgender people, making them feel more confident in that way. And it's something that I suppose with regards to speech and language therapy, it isn't really mentioned. Do you know what I mean? It's not something that you hear that much about.
Yeah,
And
100%.
I think there's this big kind of there's a lot of confusion around speech and language therapy as well, you know, people kind of confusing it more for like elocution than for, you know, what it is, which is like trying to figure out how you can live your daily life a little bit better.
100%. Or the anecdote we were always told years ago in college was, oh, speech and drama. And it's like, no,
Yeah.
it's not that, unfortunately. And there's nothing wrong with speech and drama or elocution, but we're mostly looking at difficulties in the acquisition of language or speech, or difficulties that maybe are acquired through an accident or a neurological disease or some sort of medical or any kind of metabolic condition that may cause this to change. And then also in the mix of it, your developmental stuff that just happens for some children as they're acquiring language and speech. So like it's so varied and everything. It's just so interesting. And I suppose it's a big advocacy, I think, for us as a profession that we have to keep hammering on about the work that we do so that people understand and are aware of it so that they can seek help quicker and more effectively.
Definitely. And you've put that really well as well. And I think I'm kind of, I suppose what I'm mentioning, the reason I'm mentioning it, I suppose, is because in relation to equality, diversity, and inclusion, sometimes people coming from, you know, diverse backgrounds might feel nervous about engaging with help. And, you know, specifically with speech and language therapy, because of the fact that, you know, people might confuse it with speech and drama or elocution or the idea of trying to correct someone's speech. Sometimes that can almost like it can be a barrier in itself because I'm just thinking about people coming, you know, who might be immigrants or, you know, might have, you know, a child with an accent or, you know what I mean? As in when you're kind of working on those things, I suppose it's important to highlight that like speech and language therapy is inclusive. It's trying to meet you where you're at rather than trying to change you.
100%, yeah, and I suppose I can speak to that. I suppose in general, obviously from an equality point of view and diversity, but also from the neurodiversity movement, and I do a lot of work with neurodivergent children and like that, I suppose there's that big understanding now of looking at it from to an autistic lens. And like I myself, I'm not autistic, but I'm very much in tune with listening to autistic voices. And I suppose in my practice, I've taken that very much into account the last number of years because we're doing things for a population that maybe historically the evidence might have been, I won't say questionable, but there's been challenges to that evidence now. And it's a case of, okay, how can we do this better? Why are we doing this? Is it just because it has been the norm? But should that be the only reason we do something? It's like, no, and challenging yourself to get the most up-to-date evidence-based practice and challenging the practices that are going on or were going on, and listening to the voices of the people who have been through these practices and been through these treatments or supports, and kind of saying, okay, actually, you're not a fan of that because of XYZ. Let's look at that further and see what we can do to make it more inclusive for everybody.
Absolutely, and you put that really well. And I suppose I was just wondering, when you were going into the course, were you aware that it was so female dominated?
No, and I think that sounds silly looking back now, in one sense, because it never dawned on me that I would be the only undergraduate male in my course.
Yeah.
And then, if I caveat that with saying that if you ask people who are involved in allied health, they would say, I find that strange. I wouldn't have thought that. But then immediately they'd also say, well, you'd have a lot more men in physio anyway, or a lot more men in occupational
Yeah.
therapy. And then you're kind of saying, can I ask you why you think that? And then they're like, I'm not really sure. It's just kind of a, I would just assume that. And I think there's a bias there that maybe I myself have and other people have, that it just seems to be marketed or appears as a female dominated profession. Whereas having worked in it now for the last 8 years, I would say that's not true at all. And there's a growing number of male SLTs coming out. But even recently, I joined a WhatsApp group of male SLTs in Ireland after some research I took part in. And it's so great to have a number of other people across the country that are in a female dominated profession, but just kind of seeing that actually it's not just me. There's other men around the place that are also part of this growing profession. And it's great.
No, that is fantastic. And I think the reason we're doing this is because we're trying to get like a generally more diverse population within SLT, but also within allied health generally. And I think that like knowing that there are resources for people like that there's a WhatsApp group, for guys who are in SLT, like it's a really good I think it's a really good thing to share, because at least if you're kind of coming up through your courses trying to decide what you want to do, or if you have an interest in SLT and you're worried about it, it can be quite daunting. Like, I mean, I know from dietetics we had the same thing where like, there was one guy and he left. Do you know what I mean? After 2 weeks, it was really tough. So like, I think it can be a really daunting situation if it's not as I suppose an environment that you're used to.
Of course, 100%.
And why did you feel like so why do you feel like the course is female dominated, even though I know there's a growing population of SLTs that are male and who are men? Do you feel like it's still kind of in that direction, or do you think it's kind of changing gradually, or
I think both. I think there definitely is a conscious change trying to happen. And you can see that across different conferences, and I suppose in how the material for courses are being published has a lot more, maybe a mixture of a sex and gender being presented, which is fantastic. But I think there's this maybe unconscious bias out there of a speech therapist walking in with a flowery dress, sitting down at a table with kids doing little bit of sound work, and then they go off home smiling, and that's it. Whereas I think there's this also this avenue of when it's seen as caring, the way maybe nursing years ago maybe would have been seen as female or orientated. There's not more men in that now, because there's this thing of it's a vocation or it's caring, and that seems to equate with, oh, caring professions are for women, whereas non-caring professions are more for men. And I suppose we're just challenging that norm all the time, because I really enjoy my work. And I could never imagine not doing it at the current time. And it was not something that all that deterred me. But equally, as I mentioned a few moments ago, it never crossed my mind that I would be in such a minority at a young age of going to college, thinking that this would be the case, because I did not at all think I'd be in a 99 or 98% female, 1 to 2% male population of work. Like, it never dawned on me to know.
Yeah, definitely. And did it feel weird in college, or did you get used to it quickly?
I got used to it quickly. Like, I was very lucky with the group of my classmates and like people went to college with me. They were lovely, and we had a great time in college. And I suppose I would have had I'm overall very positive. I suppose the only negative experience I would have had is I remember distinctly one time for like these preparation course for going on placement, and I had one person, I won't name any names or anything or give any information, but would have said that they would have been concerned with me working with children because I was male. And that really stuck with me, and really kind of was a, it really put me off for a while of like, am I doing the right thing? And I was like, no, because there's male teachers, there's male nurses, there's
Yeah,
male
it's really
doctors. And I
horrible.
said, and I still remember it, and it hangs at my shoulders, doesn't bring me down, but it's just like to think even how many years on, like that was an awful thing to say to someone in a student, being a student first of all, but just an awful thing to say to someone with no rationale or reason to just saying it in passing. And I'm kind of like, how words can hurt people and how words can be carried on. But I suppose since
Definitely.
then, I work in a majority pediatric, mixed or adult, minority pediatric, and I have nothing but positive feedback from parents and families. And often the most common thing that's said to me, even I work with a team of, there's six of us in a total at present, and the rest of the female, our boss and our colleagues are all female. And we'd often have conversations of maybe I find that maybe we might need to swap therapists after a period of intervention, maybe because the child might need a break or might need XYZ. And sometimes it's, would it be worth trying with a male therapist or a female therapist? And we just swap around, and it has generated such positive conversations with families and parents and my team at work that I wouldn't see it anyway negative now. But it's just funny how something like that can push you to the side for a moment or make you kind of consider what you're doing.
Definitely, and I think that's a really hurtful thing to say. Like it does sting, you know what I mean? Even when you say it now, it still stings. And I think if you're not, we spoke to another man who's an SLT as well, and he said, the same thing about, working with kids and stuff. He primarily works with the pediatric population too. And he was saying that it's one of those things where it's not really an issue until, like, it's more someone else's issue. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And I suppose to caveat that is, I suppose we're all very much very important to keep up to date with our safeguarding procedures and everything. We all do that. But I think on the opposite side, I'm extra careful. Like every room that I'm in, I'm making sure that there's a glass in the window and I'm making sure that the parent is sitting in, not for my own concern, but to ease the concerns of other people, perhaps, maybe. And that's not right to have to worry about that. But it's something that I'm very consciously aware of because you don't want it to become a potential issue of someone thinking something or having a concern about anything that's not at all the case. But it's just good to keep yourself protected, of course, as well.
Definitely, definitely. But I think it's more like you are right. What you said was completely right. We have male teachers. We have, men in all kinds of professions. Do you know what I mean? And I suppose when I come, and even within hospital-based professions as well, it's not like there aren't men around the place. That's why I think I find
100%.
it, it's even more of a confusing statement. But also, I think it's really important to highlight the fact that that was said to you in training, and the things that are said to you in training can really stick.
100%. And like I've had no issues in my professional life, thankfully, like that. And it's been great. And making that relationship with people and going to different settings, schools, community places, preschools, hospitals, nursing homes, wherever my work may take me. And I suppose I go out with the attitude of treating everyone like you'd like to be treated yourself and being professional and being friendly and engaging. And then you provide the skill you're there to provide, and everything goes about the way it should be, do you know?
Definitely, definitely. And I think as well, it's partially because when you say something like that as well, those things definitely have an impact on you long term because you remember it now, and it's been 8 years. But also aside from that, like I do think it's worth highlighting that, like, someone couldn't say that to me if I walked in. You couldn't say that, you're a person of color, so I worry about the idea of you working with kids. It's not like it's, as in it's not a statement that's appropriate, and it's just as inappropriate for you to be told that too. Do you know what I mean? As in, especially like, there's no basis for that. It's your job, it's your career. And also, you've done training up until this point in relation to that profession. So you're coming in there to learn. And, it's just someone else is putting their bias on you, I suppose is the best way to put it. But
Exactly, yeah. And that it's not my bias, and I suppose now I have protective measures in place because it's less than a 1% of the 100% that goes on every day to day, but it's something that you kind of go, okay, I'll just keep that there. It has left a mark, but I'm taking now for the positive of how can I progress within this fantastic career and do the best I can do while also being acutely aware of this little tiny minor little note, but it's not defining either, do you know?
definitely. And how does it feel for you now that you're working, like since college, since coming out of training? Do you feel like you notice it anymore, or is it something that pops up every now and then?
No, not really. I think just, having your being very realistic and mindful of knowing what you're doing in your day to day, that is protective. But also, I think actually it's had an overwhelmingly positive engagement with families and people being like, oh, we're so used to seeing maybe a female therapist. And it's like, it's so refreshing. And then parents would go, oh, I've actually never met a male therapist, but I'm assuming there's lots of you. And then you have that conversation of like, actually, no. And they're like, That's so strange to think, because I would take no issue walking into an appointment seeing a male doctor or a female doctor. So kind of back
No,
to our
yeah.
earlier point, it's not an issue, because I suppose a parent or an adult that's coming in for support is coming in for a skill set. Like everyone, you might click with
Yeah.
someone, and of course you can say, look, maybe my colleague might be better suited to support you, or vice versa. But the role of gender or sex is not the defining feature for like majority of people. So it's not an issue, to be perfectly honest.
No, definitely not. And also, to be fair, like I think for, a young guy, a young lad coming in, and even for young boys coming in, it's never a bad thing to see a person in a profession that you didn't, that is like you, if you get me. That's,
100%, yeah.
I think we all have that experience of being like, oh, I can do that because I saw another person do that that's like me, So from that perspective, it's always going to be kind of positive from a pediatric, when working with pediatric groups too.
Yeah, and I suppose even flicking it to the adult lens for a second, I know, especially I would have had some older gentlemen and older ladies over the years that maybe might have been disappointed after maybe going through something medical, neurological presentation, and having difficulties with their swallow. And they might have wanted, say, for example, a pint of Guinness or a pint of something. And they found it hard to talk to someone maybe about a particular interest or farming. And like, I'm not from a farming background, but there might be that sometimes it might be easier to talk to another man or talk to another woman. And I've been in such lovely situations whereby I have come out going, I helped that person for a couple of minutes because they weren't able to say that to anyone else in the way that they've said it to me. And it's
Definitely.
not that I'm attributing it to my gender or anything, but I think it has helped. It made it easier because their other therapist might have been female. But equally, that could be the same way in the opposite for a lady or someone who wants to talk to someone about maybe a female orientated topic. So it was lovely to have that option as well, of just having those kind of nice little moments that hadn't happened kind of randomly throughout the day. But that makes you feel good too, that you were able to help someone, you know? So it's nice.
Definitely. And do you have any advice for other minority groups or people kind of coming into a setting like speech and language therapy or other courses where, they might be the only one of their kind or maybe one or two?
I think it's very important, as you said, it's for visibility. Like, and I think even, I suppose, like a gender aside for a second, I think we need a lot more diversity in terms of the people from different backgrounds, different cultures, different ethnicities. I think it's so important because we have a lot more children now that maybe have come from different places, displacements from war and different cultures. And wouldn't it be so lovely to walk into a clinic and have someone that looks like you and that maybe speaks the same language as you, or culturally celebrates things the way that you do? And of course, we're so respectful and learning, and I'm learning so much from my multicultural clients. But I think sometimes it would be lovely if you have someone on your team, or it grew over time of having everyone represented, which is so important. So I think, in a sense, I think all adult help, especially speech and language therapy, it's predominantly female and predominantly white females. Whereas I think actually there's such need for diversity there that will just really help in terms of accessibility for people, and just feeling like that they're being understood, or take away that concern about not being understood.
Definitely. And I think as well for, for people who are non-native English speakers as well, what you're saying is really like I think it taps into something that I've heard a few times now from speech and language therapists on the podcast and outside of it, where there's this real celebration of language. Speech and language therapists don't seem like they seem happy about the fact that there's a different dialect or something interesting going on, rather than it being, I think a lot of people would go in or worry about going into speech and language therapy, and worry that it might take away something from their culture rather than someone trying to work with them.
100%. And I suppose a big bugbear of mine, and I suppose it's very clear in the research of like parents coming in that are bilingual or multilingual, and they're like, okay, we stop speaking our own language at home because we want them to focus on English because they expect us to say that. And I'm like, absolutely no. Oh my God. The evidence for multilingualism, bilingualism is fantastic, and keep your own language going. It's fantastic. Like that's your primary language. So please keep that going. And there's research for second language learning and acquiring languages, at a young age or for education. And we're guided by that evidence. But I always feel a kind of a pang in my own heart. I'm like, oh no, like you've taken away a part of your cultural identity because you think it's the right thing to do. It's actually no, of course, celebrate who you are. And we're all about fostering that. And I've had the privilege of learning little bits of words here and there from different languages and dialects, and it's been so lovely. And a child smiling at you going, you know a word that I know. And I'm like, yeah, fantastic, and that's what makes me so happy to do my job every day.
Oh, that's lovely. It's really lovely to hear. And was this kind of, this whole experience in speech and language therapy, was that your first time you felt like a minority, or had you had other opportunity, or had you had other experiences that kind of made you feel that way as a child or even as a teenager?
No, and I suppose it comes from a very privileged place when I say that, never. And then I suppose it was just such a shock to my system because it kind of rattled my perception of the world. Because as I said earlier, I never imagined walking into orientation and being like, okay, where are the other guys? It was like, oh, there'll be people, there'll just be lots of people here or whatever. And I was like, oh, I'm the only one. And I suppose it was just that kind of couple of weeks of whoa, and trying to make friends then and acquaintances and being seen as the only guy. Like I always remember, like even from older years, I remember people coming up to me like, are you the guy? And I'm like, yeah. And I still remember, and like I'd have to, they were like, no, you're not. And I'd have to show my student card to be like, oh my God, that's him. Like he's the guy. And I'm like,
You're the
yeah.
guy.
So it sounds, and I'm trivializing it there now. It sounds hilarious, but like it was kind of like, oh my God, why is this attracting so much kind of buzz when it's I'm just coming to college the same way that you're coming to college, studying the same
Yeah.
thing you're studying. Like it doesn't make any sense, you know?
It's pretty mortifying though. Like, you know what I mean? As
Yeah.
in, yes, I'm the guy. What are you supposed to say in that situation? And, that's kind of the end of it then. So, like, it is a pretty mortifying position to be in, because it's this horrible sweet spot where you're in that situation as a minority, but you're not going to be in many other situations as a minority. So it seems like it's fine to just highlight it in a way that you would treat it so differently. You know what I mean? If that was a
Yeah.
person of color, you'd never walk up and say, "Are you the person of color in this course?" You know what I mean?
Yeah,
You
no.
know,
And
are
I
you the
suppose,
gay person in this course? It just wouldn't work in the same way.
no, 100% not. And I suppose I can laugh about it because I suppose it caused me no harm in that sense
Yes,
because it was fun.
exactly.
And I kind of, I won't say milked it to my own credit, but like it obviously was helpful in some regards. And like, oh, hi. Everyone's like, oh, this is the class. And David, it'd be like, okay. So I
Yes.
kind of had, but I also then had to be careful because I'm like, okay, I couldn't make a mistake or I couldn't do anything seen as bad or bold because it's like, oh, that's him, that's the guy. So I've always been like, oh no, I have to be very good all the time.
Yeah, and you couldn't get someone to sign you in for a lecture either.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, I always had to be
Yeah.
there. And I always was, in fairness, but it, as you said, it was those little things of I couldn't be a typical college student all the time.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And what do you think would fuel the profession to be, less gendered and more inclusive to other minority groups?
I think, I suppose, a lot of the adult work per se, and I'll come back to kids, there is a massive, I think, underestimation or lack of understanding about our how diverse our role is. And I think if people could really see or if we could promote the work we do alongside people with neurological conditions, the kind of, I suppose, hands-on communication work of people with traumatic brain injuries and rehabilitation. And then kind of from the pediatric side, you have your children who are stammering or speech sounds and language. It's so varied and it's so empowering that I think there is people out there that might go into teaching that might be inclined to be allied health, but might have discovered it or have gone into a similar profession or medical or healthcare, but just not found where they're fully comfortable yet. But there's such, I suppose, a need and how will I say? So there's something very attractive about the type of work I do that I think a lot more men, if we talk about it that way, perspective, would go, actually, I can do really good work here that people are doing anyway. And again, it's not about gender or sex, but it's just interesting that it's seen as more female when actually majority of the work we do, it's not. Like it doesn't require you to be female or male or whatever gender you present at. It's work, every work is work, but it's not something that's you'd automatically, in my view, assume or associate with one sex or one gender.
Definitely not. And so it's kind of, I suppose, more about the way that that we market it as well. Like, we've been working a lot at the moment as well on trying to kind of get more inclusive marketing, make sure that there, are a diverse group of people in the pictures that you're kind of presenting to people at colleges, because sometimes seeing yourself in a little way can go a long way,
Yeah, 100%, because it's like someone like me can do it, so I'm gonna do it now, and
Yes.
that it's positive psychology and positive mindset of like, oh, I can do it. I didn't think I could, but now I can.
Yeah, exactly. And what supports do you think could be put in place to empower minority groups? Can you think of anything, I suppose, that we could do that might, encourage people a little bit more? I think your WhatsApp group is great, by the way. I think that's actually a really great start that,
Yeah,
even
and
just connecting with people.
Yeah, and I only, as I said, very recently joined it, so I must get really stuck in now and engage more with it. But it was just so lovely to hear about it. And I think maybe even at a national level, it would be something lovely, say from the ISLT, that maybe, I know it would be very small, but kind of setting up as you have with the equality and diversity and having little maybe meetings throughout the year or some kind of pop-in kind of clinic or something would be lovely just to organize. I think when people hear about it, they might tell someone else who tells someone else about it. I think it's just getting the word out there at this stage. And people will join or will get stuck in if it's available. And then it's just more so, I think something else would be, I think maybe at the CAO level and the school level, I think if there's any career fairs or if people are invited in, I think it's one of those professions that people, when they hear about it, they're like, that's very interesting. And it might be that one man down at the bottom or that one person of color that might be like, I never thought about that, but that sounds like something I'd like to do. And
Yeah,
it's just about getting the
definitely.
word out there, I think, really. And then it's having that representation at a college level, local level, national association level, and I think that all helps with visibility.
Oh, for sure, definitely. And I think it, yeah, what you're saying about, career fairs and getting in there kind of around, I think the transition year stage is probably, transition year to leaving cert kind of between there, trying to like, I suppose, meet younger people, maybe, have a speech and language therapist or allied health professional at, career
Yes.
fairs.
And I suppose I've no, we'll say, evidence per se, but I suppose anecdotally, it's always funny to me then as well when I see maybe at master's level or people who come into it in a postgrad, there's always a couple more men that will tend to apply for a master's in speech therapy than at an undergraduate level. And I think there's a sweet spot there to kind of research and look at more of why in your late 20s or maybe early 30s or whatever the age range might be, that people are like, oh, I'm going to do this, whereas they might never have thought of it at 17, 18, 19. It's funny. So I think there's something that happens there as well that people see it as more of a viable option that maybe they didn't before.
Yeah, definitely. And I think as well as that, the fact that, the college experience overall is taken into account a lot more when you're going into your undergrad.
Yeah.
If you don't see other people like you doing that course, it's a lot harder when you're 17, 18 to make that decision than it would be, when you're in your maybe late 20s or early 30s or 40s, whatever it is. I think it can be easier to do something independently when you're past that age, but at that age, it's actually very difficult to do it on your own.
100%.
So I'd say, yeah, for that reason, it would be good to kind of work on trying to, I suppose, encourage people who might have an interest to get in there and do the undergrad course too. Because I found that even with dietetics, it's quite similar. You know what I mean? It's a similar kind of trajectory. And it's just that thing of it being so daunting to walk into a class as an 18-year-old and be the only person of any kind, in that
Yeah.
situation. It's very difficult to stand out that much when you're still used to being in a sea of, school uniforms.
100%, yeah.
So, this has been great, and I honestly, you've shared so much, David. It's been really lovely having this chat with you, and especially, in relation to the pediatric stuff. And I think that I know so many guys that are great with kids. You know what I mean? I know so many guys that would be wonderfully suited to working in professions with children. So I think it's actually something that, really needs to be talked about a bit more, I think, in Ireland. The idea that overall that there are professions where it might be seen as a bit strange that you would want to do that because you're working with kids, when in fact, why is that? Why do we think that? Should we, tear that apart a little bit and look at why that bias is there?
100%, yeah. And like I can always say, and I sing this line to anyone that asks me of like, I love working with anyone that has a communication difficulty or needs some support. But there's especially my line of work currently with working kind of more disability and working with autistic children or non-speaking children, there's nothing more valuable than getting a piece of augmentative and alternative communication or an AAC device with a child and getting that child commenting and modeling and requesting to you wanting more or using that voice for the first time and like this is why I do my job. And that doesn't require you to be male or female or anything in between. It's just more so it's how you're trained, how you're driven, I suppose what your wants and likes from life are and how you value people's abilities. And I love doing that work. And I think I get such a great sense of achievement doing that work. And I think if people could see the work that they do that we do as a profession, and if they're interested in that and that makes them tick, go for it. Try it. Like, why not?
Definitely. Definitely. And
Yeah.
everybody used to be a kid, so, we all have something to relate to in that too.
100%. Yeah.
And is there anything else you'd like to add, or anything that we didn't talk about today that you'd like to talk about, or?
No, I'm very happy. I think it was
Perfect.
a great discussion, and it's been fantastic to be invited, and thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me. It's been great.
Oh, thank you so much.